I want to say that it is a joy and a privilege to be here, and I'm delighted to see so many of you that I've known for such a long time, and so many new faces. That's really exciting. The topic that I am speaking on is the stewardship of the Christian woman. And I want to first start by thanking the Airport Church and commending them for their stewardship. The women here have been putting on these ladies' days, I believe, for at least 20 years that I can recollect. That is a really important work, and so much has been accomplished through these ladies' days. They also participate in mission work around the world. They have their youth days. They have gospel meetings. And I personally know that they have been great stewards of this facility. There has been so much good work and teaching that's gone on here, and so many people baptized here. And just, you know, they have the Spanish work, the English teaching. It's just amazing, and I really want to compliment you and commend you on your stewardship. When I was given the topic, I thought, wow, stewardship, huge topic, huge. And I didn't quite know where to begin. I thought, oh, we could discuss Luke chapter 19, the parable of the money usage, where the nobleman gives his 10 slaves some money, and he wants to know, how have you used what I've given you? They would be rewarded according to how they had used the gift. Or we could talk about Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13, the parable of the unjust steward. And the main idea is that you cannot serve both God and mammon. Or we could talk about 1 Peter 4, 9. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. Talking about our mandate to be hospitable. So many things we could talk about. But that's not where I've chosen to go. I have a handout for each of you in the packet. It's yellow, but it is not necessarily meant as a tracking sheet for my lesson. It's to encourage you to further study. The scriptures are given in what I would call Bible order so that you can study them easily. And I would recommend that you do that later. I also want to recommend you to Kathleen Farrell's book, Fear Not, Walk in Joy. There are some really great chapters, two in particular, that deal with stewardship, not in quite the same way that Christine has done or that I am going to do. So it would be a great compliment. Chapter 11, Frozen to This World by Fear, and also chapter 9, Like a Long Forgotten Garden, You Have Forgotten Why You Are Here, on the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. So, that's what I want you to do with the yellow piece of paper, but keep it handy because at the end we're going to give a little self-check and see if we've learned anything today. Stewardship for women. A steward is a manager of a household or possessions. You barely see that word anymore, steward. You might only hear it in terms of a steward in a restaurant, a wine steward. You don't hear that word anymore. But in Bible times, it was a very common word. And it has to do with managing something that you are given. Christian women are managing so much stuff. Christine did a beautiful job of describing some ideas about a Christian woman's management of her personal spiritual growth. We're going to focus more on the stuff around us, our money, our time, our households, our talents, church matters, evangelism. We have a lot to do. And for the sake of this discussion, I would like to say that we are managers of the blessings and resources that God has given to us. And we are so blessed. We have an abundance. You don't really appreciate it until you lose it. And some of us, as we've traveled through our lives, have had experiences that have made us realize whether we've lost our health or our wealth or a job or you've had to leave your residence. You realize, oh, I didn't know how much I had until I lost it. Our resources are vast. So we have our money, our homes, food. We are blessed with clothes, cars, time, and most of all, our salvation. We have a lot to take care of. The main thing we want to remember is Matthew 6:33. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added to you. Now, I know in that context, Jesus was talking about food and raiment. But look at how God has blessed us. You have a lot more than just something to eat and something to wear. We are so blessed. But let's start by talking about caring for our homes. You know, ladies, I think we've been brainwashed by our society in the past few years to believe that our goal in this life is to own a beautiful home. Would you agree? I think we've been brainwashed. That is not our goal. That's contrary to what the Bible teaches. After all, Matthew 6:33, we're promised that you will have what you need. In Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, that man was very successful. He was a grower of goods, and he had more produce, more stuff than he could manage. But what did he want? A bigger barn to put it in. He was keeping it for himself instead of filling somebody else's barn. He wanted to fill up a bigger barn for himself. Is that what we're like? Are we just thinking about where are we going to get a bigger barn? At the beginning of the story, in Luke chapter 12, Jesus said, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." So we're given things on this earth, but they don't belong to us. We are caretakers. And later in verse 21, it says that the fool is not rich toward God. We want to be rich toward God. We don't want to be thinking about, wow, I'm making it now. I've got all this stuff. That's not what we want to be focusing on. And in verse 34, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So we want a treasure in heaven. Now, it doesn't matter to God whether you rent a room, live in a very crowded house, or have a really large home and you're the only one rattling around in it. This is the place where your stewardship can really manifest itself. Our job is to plan how we will use what we have to glorify God. That's our job. How are you going to use what you have? But it seems, unfortunately, to be our default mode, to be selfish. And this is where we have to transform our thinking into selflessness. So the world is trying to get to our thinking to be selfish. We need to transform our minds into selflessness. I want to start with an example from the New Testament, and that example is Lydia, found in Acts chapter 16. Now, I believe that Lydia used her resources. Remember, we're going to say that we are stewards of the resources and gifts that God has given us. She used her resources to convert others. Her entire household was baptized when she was taught by the river that day in Acts chapter 16. Then, and this is really an exciting example for us, because what Lydia did, here she was a new convert. She said, "Everyone come to my house. Let's have some fellowship." She used her home. They could have stayed at the river. She didn't have to invite all of the people there to come to her house, but she took people to her home. And it was a safe haven. I want you to remember that at the end of that chapter, at the end of chapter 16, in verse 40, Paul and Silas had just been released from prison. And where did they go? The minute they got out of prison, they went to be with the brethren, that new church in Philippi, and there they went. They felt safe there. They were encouraged. They were edified. And so it was a safe haven, and it was probably the place where the church met, the church at Philippi. And I want you to think about, is the place where I live a place of encouragement? In fact, has anybody from the church ever been to your house? Are you using that resource as an encouragement? Are you hospitable? And remember, ladies, it doesn't have to be fancy. This is not what we're going for. We're just going for the feeling, for the teaching. That's what we want. I remember when I was a new Christian, there were certain people in the church. I knew I could go knocking on their door, and I did. I remember one time I was expecting, and I was quite distraught about being a Christian. I had a real dilemma on my hands. I was a Christian, my husband was not. And I walked down Gregory Lane to the Norrids house, and there I found that safe haven. I found comfort, hospitality, and teaching. And you know what? Can we open our doors, or are we so busy that people think, ooh, better not call on them right now? Whoop, not a good time. We need to get back to that kind of hospitality and use of our resources, that kind of stewardship. The next woman in the Bible that I want to talk about is from the Old Testament. Her name is Abigail. Now, I don't know if you know the story of Abigail, but she was married to a nasty, mean man. He was pretty well off, so she was actually probably the manager of the entire household. Well, here was the problem. David, King David, and his men were out hiding in the wilderness from King Saul. There was the conflict going on, and David had about 600 men. Well, I think they were getting kind of hungry. Well, Abigail's husband, Nabal, was shearing his sheep. So there was some kind of festivity and a lot of food preparation going on for all of the workers shearing the sheep. So David sends a contingent over to Nabal, expecting the hospitality that was the norm for the day, and said, the contingent of men goes over to Nabal, and they say, we're David's soldiers, and we have taken good care of your property up here in the wilderness. Some of your sheep are out here. We haven't touched your stuff. We've taken good care of it. Could we have some of your food? Nabal says, no. Who is this David? So they went back and told David about it. And David was furious. He took 400 of the 600 men, and they were ready to go kill Nabal's household. So, in the meantime, one of the servants tells Abigail what's going on. And Abigail realizes, oh boy, I guess it's up to me. I'm going to have to act fast. Here you see her stewardship. She just rolls into action, gets out the donkeys, loads them up. She's got the bread, the wine, cakes of figs, dates, corn. And she doesn't even ask her husband, putting herself in great jeopardy. She doesn't tell him either. She goes out. So I want you to think about this. She was a steward. She took that stuff that she had under her control and went out. And she meets David on, you know, I'm envisioning this Rocky Mountain Pass or something. And she falls on the ground and says, I take responsibility for my husband. I'm sorry. You know, this is a paraphrase, of course. But she says, I have brought you the food. Please don't kill my household. And David looks at her and says, oh, wow, okay. Turns around and goes back. Abigail went back home after this, told her husband about it, and he dropped dead. He did. His heart turned to stone and he died. David heard about it. Guess what? She became David's wife. Wow. Talk about being blessed for your stewardship. Not only did she lose the nasty old husband, but she's now the king's wife. All right. But I just want you to think about this in terms of using resources. She risked everything. She could have been slaughtered by David herself when she went out there. She did not know what she was going to meet. She went out with a peace offering, but the attitude that I am going to do everything I can. Now, she probably had other responsibilities, but she left all of that and went out and took care of business. I thought that was a great example. Our home is to be used for God's purposes. When you think about your home, I'm supposed to speak, stay here and speak into the microphone. Are we using our property for evangelism and hospitality? It needs to be cared for in order to do that. We need to care for our homes so that we're ready. If your house looks like a bomb went off all the time, then you're probably not ready for company. No wonder you make it clear that you're not available. There has to be some planning. A good steward anticipates the needs. A good steward gets ready for whatever might come. Do you have something in the freezer you could pop out in case somebody shows up? You know, these are little things, but taking care of your home and taking care of the resources you have help you be ready when the time arrives. Abigail was ready. Or are we more worried, like the lesson we just received from Christine, about the way things are going, obsessing about, oh, the food, the, you know, I didn't clean the toilets, well, then, you know, we need to forget about that stuff. People are not there to give you the white glove test in your home. Your home should be as ready as possible, but you need to be available. You need to have it available. And we don't want our homes to become an unused gift. We don't want them to become an idol either. So when you think about your home, you want to strike that balance that Christine pointed out. You want it to be ready. And, you know, we're women. We want it to be as nice as possible. There's nothing wrong with that. But we don't want it to become an idol. Now let's talk about using our money. Ooh, money. This is probably the heart of the lesson. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, we are told to give as we have been prospered. I have to be honest with you, sisters. There have been so many times in the assembly when I have absolutely cringed when I've heard it spoken from the Lord's table that, oh, if you don't have anything, don't feel like you have to give. And, you know, don't give if you can't afford it. Whatever God puts on your heart, that's all right. That is false teaching. We are told in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 to put aside and save so that we can contribute to the church. I want to refer you to the story about the widow's mite in Mark chapter 12. Jesus was sitting watching people come and put their offering in the treasury. And he observed everyone grandly coming by and putting in their offering. But here came the widow, and she put in all that she had. Now, she was a widow, she was poor, and she put in all. That, is that what we do? Are we like that? Do we have that same attitude? I'm not saying you have to give all, but I'm saying do not be duped into thinking that because you're either poor or old or whatever or in adverse circumstances that you cannot put aside and contribute. That is the command there. We are told to do that. Everyone else was giving out of their surplus, but she was giving all she had. So we really want to examine ourselves. Are we, when we are stewards of the money that God has given us, are we giving out of the extra? For instance, do you show up and just kind of whip out the 20 that happens to be left after you've paid the bills when it's time to contribute? Or are you thoughtful? And we're going to talk more about this in a minute. Have you made a specific commitment of what you're going to give? In the Old Testament, whenever giving was necessary, the people poured out what they had. Moses constructing the tabernacle in Exodus chapter 36 was told by those collecting the funds and all of the gold and silver, he was told, tell the people to stop. Tell them to stop. We don't have anywhere to put all this stuff. When they were asked to give to build the tabernacle, they poured out everything they had. And do you know, this is a really great example, that was something God had given them, because when they were slaves in Egypt, do you think they had anything? No, they had nothing. But when they were told by God to leave, he said, go ask the Egyptians for their wealth and they'll give it to you. And they did. And that's how they got the stuff so that they could give for the tabernacle. Wow, that's just like us. God gives us everything. We didn't do this. God gave it to us. And that's where our stewardship comes in. We want to be giving back joyously. They were happy to do it. And they had to be restrained. Also, when David was asked the people to build the temple in 1 Chronicles 29, they also rejoiced. They were commanded, but they gave so much more. And, you know, David didn't even get to build the temple. It was his son who built it, but he prepared everything. And when the people were asked to give their gold, their bronze, they just poured it out. And they were thrilled to do it. Is that how we feel about using that resource, the stewardship of the money we have? Are we thrilled to give it back? Or are we thinking, well, I might be able to give this week. We ought to be thrilled. It's a joy to give. And you know, the people in the Old Testament didn't just give the tithe. There were the free will offerings, the first fruits, the gleaning that was left, the crops that were left for the poor people like Ruth to go and gather, way more than the 10%. Some people estimate 20, 25%. Of all their goods is what they gave. I want to just share something about this concept of the first fruits. I know some of you might be gardeners. I'm a gardener and I love it. But when I plant those little plants and I labor over them, pick the bugs off, and I go out and water them, and then I forget to water them, and I hope they're going to be all right, and then I watch that little bud, and then the little plant comes out, and I call everybody over, look, look! And then finally, I get a piece of something, zucchini, tomatoes, corn, pumpkins, whatever it is, worth picking. Would you give that away? That's what they did. Under the old law, they gave the first fruits. Wow. I don't know. I feel a little stingy about my first fruits. But the first fruits should be out of your funds, should be right off the top of your untaxed income. That is your first fruit. Not what's left after Uncle Sam gets through with you. Nothing like that. It's the first fruit, the best, the full amount. Okay? Really important concept. In Acts chapter 2, verses 44 and 45, the church was pouring out their belongings and property to share with those who had need. And in Acts chapter 4, verses 34 and 35, the brethren were doing the same thing, and there was not a needy one among them. So these people understood stewardship. They knew that what they had was a gift to be shared. In 1 Corinthians 16, we are told every one of us is to give. Now, I have also heard some false teaching that, oh, the children, the you young people, you save your money. You're going to college. You need to save that money. And you elderly people, you don't need to give. You're on your, you know, whatever it is, your pension or your debt. I don't think that's what the Bible teaches. Every one of you is to give. That's the kind of stewards we are to be. We do not defer responsibility. Oh, my dad gives. My dad's really generous. Or, you know, whatever. That is not it. We are each to give. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 3, we see the church in Macedonia giving out of their deep poverty. So even our poverty is not an excuse to not give. Even out of their deep poverty, and they were commended. But you know how they did it? They gave themselves to the Lord first. That is the key. When you have committed yourself to the Lord first, then your giving is a joy. That's the priority. It's about priorities. It's clear by command and example that we are to give no matter what our situation and on a regular basis. And I'll never forget a little old cassette tape I was listening to of George Reed from the Prunedale Church preaching about this. I was rolling along in my car, and he gave a scathing rebuke to the young people, and especially the young men, about giving. I'll never forget his words. He said, "What is this? You throw a 20 in the plate and let it pass by." I thought, whoa. But he was right. We need to teach this to our young people. He was right. And it made a big impression on me. We need to purpose what we're going to give. But here is a little caveat. We need to be careful about not judging others. Because who knows what missionaries a sister is supporting? Who knows what benevolent work she might be doing? Who knows how many turkeys she's taken over to some family, or what member in her family is needy? Who knows what mother or grandmother she is supporting? I am not saying this replaces her contribution. I'm just saying you do not judge others about this. What we need to do is teach. Teach about it. And then lead by example. We each need to examine ourselves about what kind of a steward we are. So let's think about, how are we giving? Have you learned to manage your money? I've got some money here. And this is supposed to be $100. $100. Let me see. Do you do this when it comes time to give? Or do you take this, and is this your mortgage? And then this is your grocery money, and this is your insurance, and this is your, this is my Wi-Fi cable. This is my clothing. This is my, insurance. Lord, and here, I found this to give to you. Is that what we do?
No.
Okay. Just a little visual aid, but I just want you to think about it, because remember, it's the first fruits. Have you considered that we're giving under a better covenant? That old law is gone. We have Jesus Christ, as is taught in Hebrews. And have you ever been restrained from giving too much? Has anybody ever come out and said, "Oh, no, not you. You don't give. You've given too much already." I don't think so. We need to really examine ourselves. Or do you just forget to give? You just forget to get organized before you come, or You've already got a big payment on your furniture, your refrigerator, your hobbies. You've got a big credit card bill from the clothing spree. How about your vacation? Is your vacation bill bigger than your contribution for the year? Let's think about it. I love to go on vacations. If I can go on a vacation, everyone was teasing me, I would. But I can't afford it right now, so I'm not going to go. I can't go and give right now. Let's put things in proportion, sisters. Vacations are wonderful. They're fun. But they can really break the bank. And we want to remember, first God, something left good. Okay, then you can go take your vacation. Or are you busy with your devices? Christine held up her devices. And is your cable bill, you know, $200, $300 a month? Do you keep adding the data plan? I just had to add a data plan. That's why I know about it. It's painful. It's painful, okay? So we need to keep all these things in perspective. Now this one. This one's a goodie. You wondered why I had this big old box up here. Okay, this is a Coach box. And this is the kind of purse that I didn't even know about. And this purse, it looks like it's made of gold, doesn't it? Look at this box and everything. No wonder. This purse years ago was $350. That's a showstopper. $350? What could you do for the Lord with $350? Okay, I just, you know, making a point. Or is your personal care, your nails, your hair, your clothing, your wardrobe, your shoes, is that exceeding your giving? Let's just think about it. Let's be good stewards. Or do you lie about your income so that you don't have to pay taxes? And then you say that you can't give either? That happens. Or do you get government assistance? And then you say you can't give? You still have an income if you're getting government assistance. Do you avoid discussing the topic at home because it's too touchy? Let me tell you something, sisters. At some point, we have to make a stand, whether our husbands or spouses are on board or not. You have to make a stand. And I'm only telling you this because I've had to do it, and it's not pretty. But you have to do it. At some point, you have to make a stand about what you're going to give. Now here's an interesting one. I have read 1 Timothy 2 many times, but I did not know that the Bible says something about how much you spend on your clothing. Did you know that? It says women are to dress in modest and proper clothing, not with extreme hairstyles and jewelry that will attract unnecessary attention, and not with costly garments. Wait a minute. Not with costly garments. I think I'm going to have to re-educate myself. No, I'm teasing. But there is a way to be modest and look good and not throw the budget out of whack. And that is a skill that needs to be taught. You need to teach that. And today I'm happy to say I'm wearing an example. I have my ensemble on today. I feel like one of those television shows. $60 head to toe. Okay. This I got at Ross. My boiled wool sweater, brand new, $20, $160 in the department store. So let's be good stewards. Let's think about how you're spending those dollars. Have you learned to shop at the thrift shop? It can really be fun. I happen to have a couple of thrift shop cronies. And we're naughty in the thrift shop. But you know what? It's worth it. It's worth it. So, You need to learn this skill. And I recently saw something about a mother and her daughters who were shopping, who could do the best job of saving money. The mother had her wow pass from Macy's and her ad, and she was hitting all the sale racks. The girls had their smartphones with their little whatever that is they do with the trying to find the bargains. Okay, who do you think won? Mama. Mama with the wow pass at Macy's, the sale rack, and the super discounts. Ladies, you can do it. You can be modest, and you can be a good steward of what you have without breaking the bank. So now, let's think about our time. Ding, ding. What do you do when you get up in the morning? Have you learned how to budget your time? Time is something that we all have. Some people say, oh, I don't have any time for that. Oh, really? You are a steward of your time. And when we see the parable in Luke 19 of that nobleman who gives those slaves the money, implicit in how they spent the money was the time that they invested. Time. Time is really important. Were they productive with their time, or did they waste it? Have you learned to be a time manager? Have you learned to make a list? You need to learn to make a list of what to do. Now, you notice I have here work. That's a big chunk of my time, but that's not my priority for the day. You need to make a list so that you won't forget something big, like, whoops, I forgot that I had to cook dinner today. Or, whoops, I forgot that it's Bible study tonight. Or, whoops, I'm tired. I'm too tired to study my Bible. I forgot to do that today. So making a list is really important. And if you're not a list maker, maybe you're fortunate you can do that in your head. Good for you. It doesn't work for me at all. If I don't see it written down and if I don't mark it off, it's gone. So make a list and prioritize. And along those same lines, keep a calendar, whether it's on your smartphone or in your house, keep a calendar. And when you hear about a work of the church going on, would you please mark it on your calendar? Mark it on your calendar. I have never been able to understand when people say, okay, I'll see you. And you're like, yeah, I'll see you tonight. It's Wednesday. They're like, oh, yeah, Wednesday. Yeah, I guess I'll be there. They don't even have it in their psyche that we're going to be meeting together. Okay, we need to plan this. Mm-hmm. We need to plan our lives. The Christian life is purposeful. Stewardship is purposeful. And managing your time is on purpose. You can be a big time waster if you don't watch it. I know, because I have these little quinky dinks. You know, I'll be going out the door. I'm like, gotta go. No, we gotta check this. No, we gotta check that. You need to, and that you have to talk to yourself. Stop it. Stop it and do what you need to do. Do you plan time to be evangelistic? On my big list there, I had a little note. Make encouragement calls. Check on so-and-so. Mail some cards. Set up a class. Okay, if you're one of those people, oh, I don't have any time for that. Guess what? You're accountable for your time. So you need to plan for evangelism and encouragement, because the day will zip on by and there goes another one with no service for the Lord. And don't be confused that just, oh, letting your light shine and I was good today. That is not the same as using your time for the Lord. Okay. Also involved in this is self-discipline. You have to say to yourself, no, I am not going to go in that store today. Or I am going to, even if you have to drag yourself over to the phone to call somebody to encourage them. Or, you know, whatever, however you do it, email, whatever it is you're doing. And if you need help, it can be taught. And then you have to practice it just like anything else. If you're going to be a good time manager, you have to teach that. And even you can teach it to yourself. And then you have to practice it and keep on practicing it. We need to remember what Hebrews chapter 4, verses 12 and 13 says. For the word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword, and piercing as far as the division of soul and spirit, of both joints and marrow, and able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are open and laid bare to the eyes of him with whom we have to do. So God knows how you are spending your time, and we will be judged accordingly. So be a good steward of that time. So reflect, did you spend your time as a servant or a sluggard? So now, if you could find your yellow paper in your packet. We're going to do a little wrap-up. I'm sorry that we've gone over, but you'll be ready for lunch. So here's how this is going to work. At the bottom, there are some of the examples that I've used listed. And if you have a pen in your hand, or just think about it, we're just going to do a little activity. When I mention the steward in the Bible, you make a note on your handout, or just think about an estimate of the percentage of their resources that they were using for God. So let's start with the widow that Jesus saw at the temple. I think that one's a no-brainer. She gave 100%. Okay. How about Lydia? How was Lydia giving? Lydia was dedicating herself and her household. Whatever percentage you want to put, go ahead. How about Abigail? Abigail risked her life. Okay. And then now think about your own gifts and resources, your time, your money, your home, everything you've been blessed with, your salvation. How are you using that resource? Okay. So let's finish up. Let's start changing ourselves, like Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says. I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Let's transform ourselves as stewards. So Lydia was available for God's work. Abigail dropped everything and used her resources. We can learn to use our lives as profitable servants. Ephesians 5, 15 and 16 tells us to be careful how we walk, not as unwise men or women, but as wise, making the most of our time, because the days are evil. So let's start with that degree of change that we can start right away. But I'll tell you a secret. At my job, when they say one degree of change, what they really mean is get with the program and stop whining. That's what they mean. One degree of change is code for, okay, we're going to do it, and you better get on board. So let's start. Transform ourselves, because like that man with the bigger barn, our soul might be required of us today. We don't want to be called that fool. So now, I want to read the words of David in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 10. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 10. So David blessed the Lord in the sight of all the assembly, and David said, Blessed art thou, O Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and the earth, thine is the dominion, O Lord, and thou dost exalt thyself as head over all. Both riches and honor come from thee, and thou dost rule over all, and in thy hand is power and might. And it lies in thy hand to make great and to strengthen everyone. Now, therefore, our God, we thank thee and praise thee, praise thy glorious name. But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer as generously as this? For all things come from thee, and from thy hand we have given thee. For we are sojourners before thee and tenants, as all our fathers were. Our days on earth are like a shadow, and there is no hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have provided to build thee a house for thy holy name, it is from thy hand, and all is thine. And I'm going to stop there with that reading. But to me, those are thrilling words. David was so grateful, and he realized that everything came from God. So let's really make that change. And I hope that today, with Christine's lesson and this lesson, that you've been taught and that you've been excited and inspired to do better with your stewardship. Thank you.